This is Guardian Radio, your station for up-to-the-minute news, intelligent, interactive, and engaging conversation. 96.9 FM. The views and opinions of the hosts and guests are their own and do not necessarily reflect the position of the management and staff of Guardian Network.
You're now in the Essential Zone, where we seek to be informative, inspirational, enlightening, and dynamic. But more importantly, we seek to be fair and balanced. There comes a time when the game tolerates no spectators, only players. There comes a time when we must recognize that our individual aspirations shape our collective destiny. There comes a time when getting in the game, despite the risks, despite the challenges, regardless of the cost, is simply the right thing to do. There comes a time when we must find our hearts, find our soul, and pursue our purpose for the greater good of all, for country, for humanity. There comes a time when we must manifest our true greatness. Yes, there comes a time, and that time is now. So let's get down to the essentials. The essentials. Serious radio for serious people committed to advancing the national conversation. And good evening and welcome to The Essentials, The Reset. I'm your host, Hubert Edwards, and we're here to have ourselves a wonderful conversation this evening. We certainly want you to join in on this conversation. We have no guests tonight, but we're talking about something which I think is very, very important to you. And so if you wish to join in, the numbers are 323-6232, 325-4316, 325-4259, and our text line is 422-4796. That's 422-GR96. And so if you want to send us a text, then certainly do that. But we also would love to hear from you. As you look through the business section of the newspaper today, we see in the Tribune, "We need more resident billionaires," says Craig Tony Gomez. "Not enough to attract solely property buyers," accountant says. "More must do real business," and add that Joe Public must feel a greater effect. Superplex hope for 47% return in revenue return. Amnesty write-off discourages good property taxpayers, and employers and union unite on extra 90 furlough days. Some persons are being hired without work to do, says the government. Employers set 12 deadlines for furloughs. Amnesty fuels new non-payments. And then in the Guardian, we see we are spiraling out of control, and this have to do with the level of violence which is seen in the country, especially against women. And we certainly have to, we have to pause sometime and to say to individuals, look, you know, this isn't the way to go. This certainly isn't the way to go. We cannot mistreat our young children, young girls, women. We can't mistreat anyone. And so to the extent that you are out there and you are a perpetrator of violence or contemplate doing that against anyone, you know, you need to check yourself, because, you know, that isn't good. Lewis in nomination race for the long haul. So this is Member of Parliament Lewis from Grand Bahama, Iram Lewis, who says he's in for the win with the nomination for the leadership of the FNM. Royal Caribbean confident on Paradise Island project. CEO Beach Club project is very close to being able to start. RCI still very optimistic about developing Grand Lucayan and Port. Hotel Union ascertaining how many members want to be redundant. It's an interesting headline, actually. Bahamas, 8 most popular destination for Thanksgiving travel from the U.S. That's great news. Mama Sassy wins Royal Caribbean taste test distribution opportunity. This is splendid news for young entrepreneur Sherelle Cartwright, who obviously has launched a new product, put it in the hands of, well, at least in the realm of the cruise Cruise Line, and they are supporting that. We look forward to hearing great, great things from our, you know, success at any level for an entrepreneur is always, always a good thing. And so we are calling on you. You know, we may have the chance for a little bit more time, extended talk than usual. So we want you to join us. We're going to take a quick break here. And when we come back, we're going to get right into the discussion. We're going to look at the recent downgrade and ask the question, is there a story behind the story? You will want to hear this. You don't want to move. Join us on the other side. You listen to The Essentials, The Reset. Come right back.
Life is always better with a little extra cash. At Solomon's, we know that every penny saved is a penny toward more happy times with those you love. With super savings in every aisle and budget-pleasing buys every time you shop, you can get closer to that family vacation you've been dreaming about. Go on, earn that new air fryer in produce. Snag that Exuma getaway with your cereal. Rawson Square Junkanoo tickets, aisle 7 just restocked. Bring it all together at Solomon's, where you can save more and live better.
Hubert Edwards Global, in collaboration with Dr. Dave Burrows and iRise, presents the 5th Annual Success Summit under the theme Success Keys to Transform Your World, December 3rd through 4th. 2 days of transformational experiences with dynamic presenters from the Bahamas, Nigeria, Canada, USA, and Jamaica. You can't afford to miss this mind shift moment. 5 scholarship grants, 2 leadership awards, 1 life-changing event. This is a virtual event, so visit www.nlsolutionsbahamas.com for more details. This is what you've been waiting for. Success Summit 2021.
For the best jerk in the Bahamas, you must have Balu's. Pork, fish, and chicken served with our delicious country-style sauce and authentic festivals. Balu's, Nassau East South. Call or WhatsApp 376-8951. Balu's, the jerk with the soul of reggae and the spirit of Junkanoo. Balu's jerk, traditional, slow-cooked to perfection. 376-8951. Get yours today.
This is Guardian Radio, 96.9 FM. Fresh news, smart talk, all day.
And welcome back to The Essentials, The Reset. We're going to take a quick look at the recent downgrade and the state of the Bahamian economy. Because the question I have for you this evening, is there a story behind the story? Are we having the discussions in the right way? Are we looking to really get to the root of the matter, or are we kind of sliding past what the real issues are? And I ask that because I have always made this argument that unless you properly define the problem, problem definition is important. Because if the problem is ill-defined, you're likely to solve something other than what a true problem is. And so we ask a question, are we actually looking at it in the right way? And is there a story behind the story? And I want to start with a news item from November 16, carried in the Nassau Guardian, written by Paige McCartney. And it quotes extensively someone who I have huge amount of respect for, and an individual who has served this country in multiple capacity as a former governor, as a former minister. Now he sits as the chair of the board that will be dealing with the debt, and he has served in multiple capacity. And so when he speaks, you definitely have to listen. But on this particular day, he's quoted as saying, or at least the headline says, read, Smith, rating agency are unduly harsh. Debt Advisory Committee chairman stresses Bahamas has never missed a payment or reneged on a debt. And so that is the argument that Mr. Smith, former Minister Smith, former Governor Smith, puts out there. And the question we must ask, is this true? Is the agencies, the rating agencies, are they unduly harsh on the Bahamas? And are they being unduly harsh because the Bahamas has not missed or never missed a payment or reneged on a debt? And is that actually true? Well, it's factual. The Bahamas has never reneged on debt, just the same as many other countries within the region, even though some of those countries have ended up in an IMF program. So the larger issue really is not whether the Bahamas has missed a payment or reneged on a debt, but what are the fundamental issues which are being considered by the rating agency, and whether those issues, as stated by the rating agency, make sense, they're honest, they're true, and they're something which you can agree with. If you look at the article carried in The Guardian, he said that both agencies, it says that both agencies cited increasing debt levels, which we are aware of in recent years, without favorable fiscal management strategies. So the rating agencies are saying that your debt is growing, but we do not see the fiscal management strategy, which is broader than debt management itself. And it's on this basis where the Debt Advisory Committee chair said the analysts, in his view, are not looking seriously at the country's ability to pay its debt and are ignoring the fact that the Bahamas has never not paid its debtors. They are being, in my view, he says, unduly harsh with their ratings and their analysis of this country in terms of us having to pay extra points on interest because of their downgrade. So as a result of the downgrade, the debt will get more expensive. And so he's lamenting that. And, you know, we all want to lament that because we don't want to pay more. But he goes on to say, I say it principally because they seem not to take into account the fact that the Bahamas has never missed a payment, much less reneged on debt from the beginning. Yet we find ourselves in the same category of countries that have been in and out of IMF program and are still there. So I think sometimes they're judging us unduly harshly. I also think that this one on Friday, I guess the last downgrade, the further downgrade, absolutely ignores the fact that we are coming out of a COVID environment and the likelihood of increased visitor arrivals to the Bahamas will really begin to show. If nothing else changes, at the very least, things will not only stabilize, but are looking up. So the big question I have for you is, Mr. Smith right? Is he correct? Should we be lamenting what the rating agency have to say? Are they just out to get the Bahamas? Are they doing this thing wrong? Are they doing this thing to get us, to make it difficult for the Bahamas? So oftentimes when there is a downgrade, the news for most persons, the information for most persons stop at there has been a downgrade. And so the Bahamas has moved from B+ to BB-. And what does that mean for many persons? I mean, it's simply, that's enough for a lot of individuals. The Bahamas has been downgraded. Things are bad. Things are not going good. Or these people are out to get us. It was the fault of the last administration. It is the fault of this administration. Yada, yada, yada. But let's ask the rating agency, in this case, S&P Global, what exactly is the reason given or the reasons given for the downgrade of the Bahamas? This last one. And in the overview of the document, it says, the lingering financial impacts of Hurricane Dorian and COVID-19 pandemic have inconsiderably reduced the Bahamas' fiscal flexibility and its capacity to address future shocks. So through the eyes of the rating agency, it is looking at what exists in the Bahamas at this moment. And it is saying, no fault of the Bahamas, there was Dorian. No fault of the country or the leadership, there is the COVID-19 pandemic. However, as a result of those two incidents, those two events, the Bahamas is suffering reduced flexibility and capacity to address future shocks. So the rating agencies are thinking about 2022, 2023, and 2024. The question I would have for you, if you were to say, well, yeah, they were harsh, is this correct? Is this the wrong thing to say? Is the Bahamas in a better position as a result of Dorian? Is it in a better position as a result of COVID-19? Or is it factually having reduced ability to meet future shocks? Is that the case? The second thing which the rating agency said is failure of successive governments to implement timely and effective reforms has weakened public finances, created a high debt burden, and increased funding pressure. So, what is the unfolding of this? On one hand, we can make the argument that, you know, maybe, you know, you shouldn't downgrade us. That's kind of a little bit too much, right? But on the other hand, they're saying, look, there are some things which the country has the ability to do, but successive administrations have not done that. And as a result of that, there is a weakening in public finances. There is a development or a built-up of high debt, so we have a high debt burden, and there is increased funding pressure. So the government has greater challenges. Well, it has greater needs for funding in the first instance. And as the debt burden grows, greater challenges to meet that funding, as is evidenced by the fact that right now we have maybe over $800 million, which needs to be funded and has not yet been funded. And we know that effort is being expended in that direction. So the question is, are they wrong? Are these the things which need to be addressed? Do we need to get to the place where our public finances is again strengthened? Do we need to get to the place where our debt burden is significantly reduced? Do we need to get to the point where, again, we are not under significant funding pressures, such that we will be looked at favorably? If the answers to these are yes, then can we then conclude that the country is being harshly treated? Now, there may be room for arguing that. They may not have to have gone as far as they have gone, but at a fundamental level, are there some issues here that we, as a country, the Bahamas as a country, must take into consideration and not ignore in broad terms and saying, well, you know, things are different than these guys are saying. The third point I want to draw to your attention is that they reflected that the Bahamas is having a stable outlook, largely because of the recovery from the pandemic and the fact that they're expected to be bolstered by income coming in, especially from tourism, so foreign exchange revenues. And this is the way they put it, which I think is very, very important and very, very instructive for anyone looking at this and have the need to go away with the creation of solutions, or at least focusing the solutions on the points where they need to be focused. It says, the stable outlook reflects our view, because they downgraded the Bahamas to BB minus, but they kept the outlook as stable, yeah? Or at least the outlook was stated as stable. And they said it like this. The stable outlook reflects our view that an improving economy will bolster government revenues even in the absence of meaningful fiscal reforms. So basically, the government will have to do absolutely nothing. If the government did nothing at all, there is the expectation that as the pandemic wanes and as revenue picks up, especially from certainly from tourism, because that's our main income earner, there is going to be a bounce back of revenue. There's going to be a bounce back of the economy. Things are going to kind of level out and things are going to stabilize. But the question, therefore, is, if this stable outlook was given, even though there is no confidence or there is low confidence of the implementation of meaningful fiscal reforms, what then would have been the position had we demonstrated to the rating agency that here is a suite of well-structured, well-thought-out, well-strategized reforms that will either be implemented or is in the process of being implemented or has already been implemented? You see where the difference is? And this is not anything pointed at any one administration, because as they have said before, as they said in the document, successive administrations have not done this. And to be fair to the current administration, being in the seat now for less than 3 months, they obviously could not have implemented any of this by this time. The question, though, is, do they have in their plans, do they have in their strategies, these reforms which are going to be considered to be meaningful? And if those are the basis on which we were downgraded, then we must ask ourselves the question, are these three stated justification, rational reasons, are they correct? Can we justify them? Can we come to a point where, while we may not totally accept maybe the extent of the downgrade, we could accept that these are some things which needs some attention? While we may disagree with extent, we may certainly agree with whether they're there or not there. So here are some important things. So we are stable with no reform. So the question is, what would happen if we had those reforms? Would we be seen as positive? Would the outlook have been positive in the face of the reforms? What it says to me is, at least from the perspective of the rating agencies, if you accept their position, it says to me that as a country, we have to go out and demonstrate. And we're not doing this simply for the rating agency. I'm saying this on the basis that if they are correct, and I would put to you that there is sufficient meat in these points to convince me that they are at least on the right track, because we ourselves as commentators, persons who have written, Mr. Smith himself, who has spoken about this in previous time, I think could generally agree that the Bahamas is lagging in terms of the reform, the fiscal reforms which are needed. But it's not only simply the fiscal reforms. There are reforms in other areas such as energy, and we can talk about that at another time. But we have some work to do, and there are some things, obviously, we can do to make ourselves better. The good news is, while we may lament this downgrade right now, if we were to take the time to go through this document, and I'm sure the persons within the ministry and the persons who it concerned read this totally, But many of us out here on this side of the world, we haven't read it. We have just been told or we heard that there was a downgrade, and we draw our conclusion whether it's bad or good depending on who we like or who we don't like in this whole process. But my proposition is, what I'm positing here is simply this. If we were to take what was outlined here, take what is outlined, and go to work on addressing these or debunking them, we are going to be in a better position to move this country forward, to reduce the incidence of fiscal or rating downgrades. It definitely will happen. Now, look at one of the things which I think in this whole process that we kind of miss, right? The Bahamas convertibility assessment, the Bahamas transfer and convertibility assessment has been upgraded from BB minus to BB. What is a transfer and convertibility assessment? What does it do? It basically says the chances of the government, largely through the central bank in this instance, the chances of the government restricting non-sovereign, so Royal Bank or any other entity, any entity that owes foreign currency debt, the possibility of that restriction has been reduced. How do we understand this? Remember, in the midst of the COVID crisis, one of the things that the central bank did was to put a restriction on the payout of dividends, and also, naturally, a restriction on the acquisition of foreign currency for the purpose of sending it out of the country. That tells its own story. It says, one, that we expect to have an inflow of revenue, and therefore foreign revenue. Therefore, we don't have to be as tight as we were. But the rating agency is looking at this transfer and convertibility assessment because it's indicative of the state of the country, of the state of the reserve, of the opinion and the view and the outlook of the agencies which manage that aspect of the country business as to whether or not we will have foreign currency available. And that is indicative of the pressures at the time. What this is saying by improving is we expect that there's going to be more available, and as a result, we're going to increase it. So what then is the real story behind the story? I think to do that, I think to get the story behind the story, we have to look at the document that was presented in its totality. Read it from top to bottom so that we can understand what it is that these individuals are saying. Why are they indicating that the Bahamas deserve, in their opinion, to be downgraded? So they downgraded the Bahamas. And in the document they say, okay, we have downgraded you, but here are two scenarios that you can look at. We would consider upgrading based on some factors, that's within the next 12 months, or we may again downgrade you based on the existence of certain factors. And the question, therefore, is in their mind, what are the things that they consider to be important, which, if not met, would lead to a further downgrade of the Bahamas? So 12 months out, we don't have to guess what they're thinking for a downgrade in 12 months' time. They explicitly says it right here. So on the downside scenario, it says we could lower ratings over the next 12 months if the government's inability to close budget deficit leads to fiscal deficit remaining elevated for a prolonged period. Yeah, so if based on where we are right now, If the government does not demonstrate an ability, and they didn't say close it totally, demonstrate an ability to close budget deficit. So right now we are at an elevated level of 900 million. The previous year we were at 1.3 billion. Before that we were somewhere around maybe I think 800, and then it was at the historical levels on average of about 500 million. If we cannot demonstrate the ability to close that, such that it is going to be high, elevated, for a prolonged period, for a foreseeable period, then the rating agency is saying, we may consider downgrading you again. So that's the first factor they give. The second one is, if it weakens the government ability to obtain funding, what does that mean? If the state of affairs doesn't change such that the government have difficulty in borrowing, weakens the sovereign ability to obtain funding, can't get money to borrow, or borrowing is at an expensive rate because of the outlook, then clearly, and the markets will kind of tell you that the market is able to do in between that 12 months, give some sort of an indication as to exactly how much difficulty exists in that regard. And the third, which I think is a very, very important one, it says, furthermore, we could also lower the ratings should the economic recovery lag our expectation. Now, I don't know exactly what that expectation is. They would have outlined some numbers, some 3.7% return. But let's assume that, well, we don't have to assume. The return that they would have outlined, I can state it here, I think it's 3.7 in 2021. But let's assume, therefore, that we come in at 1.5, or we come in at 2%. This is saying to us, to you, to me, that part and parcel of the way forward for the Bahamas is obviously growth. At least from the rating agency perspective, if there is not growth at a particular level, at a sufficiently high level, then we are going to have some challenges and we may consider downgrading the country again. And that is important. So as we sit down and we think about these things, as we sit down and we reflect on upgrade or downgrade, but in this instance, we have gone through a consistent number of downgrades. We have not had any type of fluctuation. It has been downgrade, and further downgrades over the last while across multiple administrations. What exactly are the triggers? What exactly are the things which the rating agency experts are contemplating, are considering why they levy these downgrades? And is it sufficient for us to say broadly, well, we have never missed a payment, we have never reneged on a payment? Is it sufficient? Yes, it's a good argument to be made, because when you consider an entity, in this case the government, the sovereign credit worthiness, that must be considered in the pot. So compared to any country which has defaulted on its debt or reneged on payment, then the Bahamas must be in a better position than that country. But in this instance, you are being compared to yourself. The Bahamas is generally, in the totality of this document, is not being compared to anybody else. There is no peer assessment for risk. It is simply saying, here is where you are today, or here is where you were. Here is where you are today, and here are some things that we are going to look forward to in the future. Where you were is used as a benchmark for what we see at this moment, i.e. downgrade. Where you are going, or where we believe that you can get, will also be used as a benchmark versus today, and that will determine the extent to which you may be further downgraded. So those three factors are the factors we need to keep our eyes on over the next 12 months, whether the Bahamas will close the budget and therefore reduce the deficit so that it's not elevated over a long period, whether the Bahamas will see itself in a weakened position in terms of obtaining funding, and whether the economic recovery is going to lag that which was projected, and we will get that number as we go through this discussion. But certainly, we must pay attention to those. These are the things which must come to mind. And here is why I state at the beginning, is there a story behind the story? Because the story behind the story in many ways is good news. They have some element of good news. It's pretty much saying, if we are able to do these things, things which are in our purview, we have the ability to turn the tide, to change the trajectory, and to start to move forward, at least as it relates to us being downgraded or not downgraded. And so I want you to think about that as we go into a break. And I also want you to join me. I would love to hear your thoughts. The numbers again are 323-6232, 325-4316, 325-4259, or 422-4796 for our text line. When we come back, we're going to look at some of the upside scenarios, and then I'm going to go into the rationale on a deeper level so that we can understand exactly what it is that the Bahamas is missing, what are the things that we need to do, and how we can put ourselves in a strong position to start turning the country around. Is it too much to just look at this broadly? Can we run away from the facts? And if we do, will we solve the problems for the future? You listen to The Essentials. Don't move. Come right back.
Life is always better with a little extra cash. At Solomon's, we know that every penny saved is a penny toward more happy times with those you love. With super savings in every aisle and budget-pleasing buys every time you shop, you can get closer to that family vacation you've been dreaming about. Go on, earn that new air fryer in produce. Snag that Exuma getaway with your cereal. Rawson Square Junkanoo tickets, aisle 7 just restocked. Bring it all together at Solomon's, where you can save more and live better.
Hubert Edwards Global, in collaboration with Dr. Dave Burrows and iRise, presents the 5th Annual Success Summit under the theme Success Keys to Transform Your World, December 3rd through 4th. 2 days of transformational experiences with dynamic presenters from the Bahamas, Nigeria, Canada, USA, and Jamaica. You can't afford to miss this mind shift moment. 5 scholarship grants, 2 leadership awards, 1 life-changing event. This is a virtual event, so visit www.nlsolutionsbahamas.com for more details. This is what you've been waiting for. Success Summit 2021.
For the best jerk in the Bahamas, you must have Baloo's. Pork, fish, and chicken served with our delicious country-style sauce and authentic festivals. Baloo's, Nassau East South. Call or WhatsApp 376-8951. Baloo's, the jerk with the soul of reggae and the spirit of Junkanoo. Baloo's jerk, traditional, slow-cooked to perfection. 376-8951. Get yours today.
This is Guardian Radio, 96.9 FM. Fresh news, smart talk, all day.
We go through this discussion on the downgrade and discussion on the whole idea of, you know, whether or not this is something that we can ignore, is something that we can talk broadly about, or are there important information in the discussion in the document that we should leverage in order to get to the place where we have an understanding of exactly what is required. We have a text here which takes us a little bit out of our topic. It says, good night, Mr. Edwards. Love your show. Very informative. Would you know how severance is paid? Is it 2 weeks for 24 weeks? It says some other things which we don't need to get into. I do not have all of that information at the top of my head, Texter. So what I will do is really look this up and I'll read this to you. It says entitlement of employees whose tenure is between 91 and 179 days. So for severance, you would need no notice. Accrued vacation, 4% of total salary earned for the applicable period. If you are working between 6 and 12 months, then you get 1 week notice or 1 week salary in lieu of notice and 1 week salary. So that's 6 to 12 months. If you are in a non-managerial position whose tenure exceeds 1 year, then you get 2 weeks notice or 2 weeks salary in lieu of the notice. If you're a managerial staff, then the managerial staff is entitled to this. 4 weeks notice or pay in lieu of notice and 4 weeks salary for every year of employment up to 12 years. And so for every single year you work, if you were a managerial, you would essentially get 1 month. 1 month pay, and that goes up to 12 years. So I hope that helps. I am looking at this on the government website. If you go to the Ministry of Social Services and Urban Development, you should be able to find that information. So I hope that was useful for you. So let's get back to our discussions. So when we went out, we talked about the downside of this whole affair. So what about the upside? And from S&P perspective, it's basically saying, if these things are seen over the next 12 months, then we will potentially upgrade you. So it reads as such. Although this is not our base case, so they have some other base case in mind, but they're throwing this out there for the contemplation of the authorities, of the policymakers. Although this is not our base case, we could raise ratings over the next 12 months if, one, the government established a track record of enacting meaningful financial reforms. What does meaningful mean? Well, they know. The government knows. I would think it would have to do with reforms around fiscal responsibility, to do with the budget, to reduce expenses, and maybe to even look at finding additional revenue. So if the government was to enact meaningful financial reforms, then they would look at improving it. Number two, if the government was able to demonstrate an ability to raise revenue. So here is the rating agency saying, we do not believe that the government is going to improve its revenue position. But the subliminal message in that is, we believe that there's a need for additional revenue. And so if the government could demonstrate that, and how government usually demonstrate increased revenue? Taxes. So subliminally, they're saying, we don't think the government will raise taxes. But if the government did demonstrate that it has the ability to raise taxes to generate additional revenue, then we will consider improving that. What does that mean for your credit worthiness? What does that mean for the rating that you have been given? If as a borrower, as a personal borrower, you were to go to the bank and you get a loan for $100,000 when you were making $120,000 per year, and then you lose your job, you out for a bit, you find another job, and you're now making only $60,000 per year with no ability to make any more. The bank is kind of looking at you differently because your risk profile has changed. It is saying to you that you have a need for additional revenue, but we don't see where it's coming from. Looked at differently, let's assume that you didn't lose the job. You have this loan for $100,000. You're still making $120,000. And then you went out and you got another $100,000 loan with the expectation that things are going to be nice and rosy and chances are you're going to get some bonus and you're going to get an increase in your salary. But that has not happened. In fact, your revenue has reduced. The bank is now going to look at you kind of cast-eyed and say, I wonder if our $200,000 is now at risk, which is basically what they're saying. Now, ultimately, we know that the Bahamas is going to pay its debt back. There's no question about that. We know that they're going to find the money to pay the interest, and that is going to hurt the local player, the citizen, the resident. We know that for sure. In that regard, Mr. Smith is totally right. The Bahamas has never missed a payment, never reneged, and the possibility of that happening in the near term is kind of like zero to none. However, looked at objectively, the question to ask is the Bahamas earning position, is the Bahamas financial position in at the same level of stability as it was 12 months ago? And if the answer to that is no, then certainly at least we are walking in the direction of a change. We may argue the extent, but there's certainly a change. And because these things come in bucket, usually you move from one to the next because it's predetermined. But maybe we shouldn't have gone all the way there. However, these things are saying to us that that's the direction we should go in. The third one is leading to sustain near balance financial result. And number four is improve economic prospects. Now, where is that improved economic prospect going to come from? On one hand, they already gave us the benefit of being stable because of the bounce back of the economy. So that is kind of taking us back to what the old normal was. So we already have that. There's no disadvantage there. Where is the improved prospects going to come from unless they're saying, well, we need to see some outline of new growth, new industry, greater diversification, new foreign direct investment, new local and domestic investment. We have to see prospects of growth. We have to see a reduction in unemployment, an uptick in hiring. We have to see more buoyancy in the economy. There needs to be a little bit more of that. And if that was to be the case, then certainly we would contemplate upgrading the Bahamas. I don't care how hard you are on this administration or the previous administration. If that is laid out before you as a possibility, I don't see why you would disagree with it. I don't see why you would disagree with these things being done. Yes, we need to be upgraded. But maybe that's not the argument. The argument is we shouldn't be downgraded in the first instance. I believe, though, that a lot of this discussion is moving in a direction which properly reflects the state of the Bahamas today. And as a result of that, there is work to be done. There's a lot of work to be done. The government will have to become, in my mind, significantly more facilitative so that the private sector can do its thing. The government will have to become way more aggressive in terms of its reform, whether it's financial reform or energy reform or seeking to nurture new industries, whatsoever it is, the government will have to become more aggressive, more ambitious in that regard. And as an administration, this administration is going to have a relatively difficult time balancing those things. Why is this so? Because, of course, it came to power on the strength of certain policy positions which were outlined. And those policy positions are kind of finding themselves being rubbed up against some realities. And there's friction. The question is, are we ready to delay, to transform, to evolve, to change, to readjust those for the long haul, for the greater good? I think it's important that those things get contemplated. So that is simply all we have talked about right up to now. It's kind of the precursor into the document. Now, here is where they get into the rationale, and I'm going to read some things and kind of discuss around them. So the document says, rationale. The Bahamas entered the pandemic with little financial flexibility owing to its sustained budgetary imbalances, high debt burden, and vulnerability to external shocks. So when the Bahamas, when the pandemic came around, when it started to hit somewhere around March 2020, the Bahamas found itself in a weakened position going into this. You could compare and contrast that with an even weaker economy, Jamaica, which, while certainly not performing as well as the Bahamas, at that point in time, from a fiscal perspective, was in a stronger position, had had multiple periods of surpluses, was seeing reduction in its debt to GDP in significant portions, that it was unleashing capacity to invest in capital investment. Those capital investment was creating unemployment. Unemployment was at its lowest in many, many decades, so on and so forth. But there was no growth. We have to admit that there was absolutely no growth. But some things were going well. The Bahamas, in contrast, found itself in a weaker position than that. The debt burden had climbed to 2.4, had climbed almost 2.4 billion over the last two fiscal years, and was representing 21% of the interest thereon, was representing 21% of budgetary expenses. So here it is, you have a dollar to spend on your expenses, or $100, let's say $100 to spend, it makes for easier discussion. You have $100 to spend. But before you can spend that $100 to buy your food and whatsoever, you have to take out $21. $21 to pay interest on your loan for the year. $21. And that doesn't include the capital portion that you will have to pay. So you kind of start to have an understanding exactly how these agencies looked at it. They went on to indicate that furthermore, the Bahamas is exposed to financing risks as it seeks to fund its deficit and refinance existing debt. We had a discussion here, an extensive discussion with an economist, Marla Dukeran, and one of the things that she pointed out was that the Bahamas face an elevated level of rollover risk. Rollover risk is basically the risk that if you were to take the debt that you currently have and go back to the people and say, we are going to refinance this by rolling it over for another period, for an extended period, they may just say to you at some point in time, you know, give me my money. I want all of my money now. It's never, ever going to get as extreme as that. But that's kind of what the risk in totality defines, the inability to roll over those debts. And so the more the Bahamas debt stock grows, the weaker the performance of the Bahamas in terms from a growth perspective, growth in terms of GDP, the weaker that becomes, then the greater the financing risk is going to emerge and the greater the rollover risk is going to be. And so these are things which cannot be ignored. So in the totality of the discussion, talking about us locally, as Mr. Smith sits with his committee and his team and the analysts and all of those. These are things which they must take into consideration. Whether or not he will come out and say that totally in the public is a whole different matter. But I'm convinced that given the individual that he is, given the individual who are likely to participate in this endeavor, these are the things that they're going to look at. And they're going to take them very seriously. It goes on to point to the fact that S&P says, we believe the nascent economic recovery will support government revenue, an absent meaningful reform, and only gradual decline in fiscal deficit to historic levels, slowing the growth of debt. What is that saying to us? Nascent, the environment which is emerging at this point in time is positive. It's early, it's new, but it's positive, it's nascent. And that's a good thing. We're expected to do better as we go forward. But here is what's important in that statement. Without the reforms, it is expected that this new, growing, improving environment will only take us as far back as where we were historically in terms of our deficit levels. So when we were popping at about $500 million per year, this is saying we may not be at 951. We may not see 1.3 billion again, but we could still be at 500 million. That's high, or somewhere about in that ballpark. That is still high, which then speaks to the idea that if the Bahamas is going to change that old scenario in that we do not go back to our historical levels and then plateau, we must find growth. The growth prospects have to be in place. And I believe that this is where the rubber meets the road, for not only from a rating agency perspective, but from our own internal perspective, from an administration perspective. I think the question it will ask and will be very, very interesting in answering very clearly is, how can we get to the place where we no longer have deficits of $500 million per year? How do we get to that point where we can have deficit without really encroaching and going into the realm of austerity, where we cut in expenditure significantly? How do we get there? That therefore calls for growth. You must have some growth prospects on the table. So this goes on to say that as a result of all of that, without meaningful and sustained revenue or expenditure reforms, the sovereign will continue to add to its gross debt stock and interest costs, limiting the government's ability to respond to future shocks. This is where the rubber meets the road. So, in layman terms, in terms that you and I can understand, if there isn't meaningful change in getting new revenue, sustained revenue, and reducing expenditure. So they say it very fancifully. They say meaningful and sustained revenue or expenditure reform. In other words, find new revenue and cut your expenditure. That's basically what it is saying. You have to find it and it has to be sustained. And if that doesn't happen, it says the sovereign will continue to add to its gross debt. That means national debt will go up each year. The interest costs will increase each year. And that is going to limit the government's ability to respond to external shocks. So if we go back to the beginning of the pandemic, where the Bahamas was in a weakened position because of its fiscal status at that point in time, this is saying that this continued increase in national debt, increased costs of funding the national debt, is going to put the Bahamas in a similar weakened position or a worse weakened position, such that if there was a future shock, if there was another pandemic, if there was another global financial crisis, the Bahamas would be ill-prepared to respond effectively with monetary policy, with social spending to deal with unemployment, so on and so forth. So you kind of now start to see a picture being painted as to exactly how they are thinking about the state of affairs of the Bahamas and consequently why they conclude what they conclude. The question for you is, if you would wish to disagree with their conclusion, is do you agree with their rationale? Are the things which they're saying true or false? Is the extent to which they are making these points true or false? The minister, the prime minister himself, made a statement recently that, you know, we would like to get the Bahamas to 25% revenue to GDP. Moody's came back behind and said, well, we don't see how that is going to happen in the time slated. It's going to be difficult. The Minister for Economic Affairs came back and said, well, you know, yeah, we kind of generally agree, but, you know, we're going to work on some things. We're going to focus on some areas and we're going to see how best we can do that. We're going to give it our best shot. And that's fine. That's what needs to be said. And we have to work in the direction of finding this additional revenue. But the question still remains, are we where we are right now? And is what they're saying accurate? Institutional and economic profile, meaningful, and they keep using this word, meaningful public sector reform is not expected in the next 1 to 2 years. Increased tourism will lead economic growth in 2021. So whatsoever growth we are expected for the rest of the year is going to come from tourism. And that makes sense, make absolute sense. It's 1 + 1 = 2. But the first part of the statement is very, very important. And I think a reasonable statement to make, given that we just had a change in administration. Meaningful public sector reform is not expected in the next 1 to 2 years. So, and I don't think that means that the administration is not going to do anything or start to put things in place. I think it's a recognition that there is a timeline, a time lag, which is going to be needed, a lead time, before those things which are planted will start to generate green shoots. And that, I think, is a reasonable position. We cannot, or we should not expect that this administration is going to create magic out of the air. And this is one of the reasons why we must argue for and continue to argue for greater continuity between administrations, working towards a common outlook, working based on a generally common play sheet. So while some of the players may change and while some of the plays may change, there is an agreed general strategy which just will be. And as a result of that, that gives greater continuity. And therefore, any momentum which was created from point one continues at point two and point three and so on and so forth. I think that is very, very important. So they're pointing out the fact that, you know, don't look for these green shoots to pop up anytime soon. So we do not expect financial reforms will reverse the recent deterioration in public financing in 1 to 2 years, pretty much. Anything you do now won't have an impact in 2 years. Maybe in the third year, we will start seeing some things happening. Economic recovery is expected to be the main cause of smaller deficits. So basically, any deficit reduction we experience is going to be as a result of the bounce back, but not because the government find new revenue or reduce costs. That's what they're saying. They don't expect the government to cut any costs or to increase taxes in any way, shape, or form. Now, how do these persons say these things? Where do they get this information from? Why are they making these statements? Obviously, they had conversation with the policymakers. And the policymakers outlined their strategies. And they say broadly, are you going to increase taxes? No. Are you going to cut expenditure in this area, this area? No, that's not what we plan on doing. You know, see our plan here in the case of the PLP now. See our blueprint for change. That's basically what we're working with. They look at it and there is no instance of tax increases. There are no instances of significant expenditure reduction. And so they make these statements. So let's run through this quickly so we can get into a break. This goes on again. It's talking about the analysis that the Bahamas faced the two large shocks. We already know that. And then it goes into this part to say the rapid increase in debt over the last 2 years mean the Bahamas' previous fiscal consolidation plans will likely be insufficient to meet the country's debt targets without material new revenues, significant cost cutting, or economic growth well above historical averages. This is what I've been alluding to. This is what I have said multiple times long before this downgrade in many other fora and right here on this radio. Because of the changes, the reforms which were, the consolidation plans which were put in by the FNM may now prove to be insufficient in the face of material new revenues. This is what they say, right? It's in the document. Material new revenues, significant cost cutting, or economic growth well beyond average, historical average. What is our historical average growth? Maybe around 1% or so. In the last couple of years, we have seen 2% or a shade just under 2%. But they're saying that if we continue to grow at that level, our historical levels, then what we currently have in place isn't sufficient to move the needle forward. And I think that this is where we must start to kind of sit up and ask ourselves some very important questions. They point to the fact that, you know, we are very exposed to climate risk, Dorian environmental risk. And as a result of that, the Bahamas have to grow in order to become more fiscal, to generate fiscal resiliency. It's important. It's critically, critically important that we do that. So as we look at this downgrade, I think we need not just contemplate, well, you know, they've downgraded us, they're out to get us, this is not a good thing, this is a bad thing. But let's look behind the story. Let's look at the story behind the story, and let's determine where we can move forward. They have not enacted material revenue measures or sustained material cuts. And this is talking about the new the government which was in place. Although successive governments have continued to work on policies and legislation to support their fiscal responsibility mandate, they have not enacted material revenue measures or sustained expenditure cuts. We believe the new administration will take time to assess the government, the country's fiscal and debt situation, that's what's happening now, which may further delay the implementation of new fiscal measures. We believe the country's track record of slow progress in reforming public finances and key sectors of the economy has contributed to the weakening of the financial profile over many years and hurt its economic performance. Most notably, failure to advance public financial reform has led to a marked increase in debt, sovereign debt burden. They're saying very clearly that it is as a result of the failure to impact these reforms why we are where we are today. And so, despite fairly strong GDP growth expected, and the expected thing in 2021 and 2021 is 3.7 and 8.6 respectively. So these are the rates they say, if we don't meet these, then, you know, we may be on the chopping block again. We believe that it will take several years for nominal GDP to reach pre-pandemic levels. We expect GDP per capita to be 27,300, and that's clearly a reduction in 2021. So There you have it. There are some issues, there are some important issues which I believe if we're going to engage in a conversation about whether we should be downgraded or not, whether we are being treated harshly or not. So these are some of the underlying issues which I would want to engage anyone in. And we must operate from a position of, okay, let's outline the rationale. Is that true? Is that not true? Are they going too far on this? Have they not taken this into consideration? And then in totality, we will draw a conclusion at the end of the day. But the way I see it here, right, what has been outlined, the current administration or anybody that would be in power has the ability to debunk these, or if they are not debunkable, meaning that they do exist, then it has the right to say, we are working on these things. Here are our strategies. Yes, you say 2 years, but you know, we believe that this will in 18 months start to show true promise. And 12 months down the road, we are showing the green shoots. And they say, well, you know, our 2 years was kind of too far. We accept your position. We see where you have made changes. And we believe that there are some values which is going to emerge here. So we will rethink this. Why are these persons important, though? Why don't we just say to the rating agency, go fly a kite? We can't say that because they send important information to the world, to our creditors. They say to us, look, they say to the world, look, the Bahamas is in a strong position to pay its debt. So if they want some more money to borrow, feel free, but be comfortable lending it to them at this risk. That's what they do. And now they're saying, we are having some thoughts about that conversation. And maybe the Bahamas is not in as strong a position as it was. So here is a bit of caution that needs to be taken in entering a credit arrangement with them. What does the Bahamas need to take from that? Well, we need to fix that. And if we need to fix that, we need to understand why they're saying that we're in this position. We need to look into those. And if those are true, if those are accurate, if those are right, then those are the things that we need to work on. You've been listening to The Essentials, The Reset. Let's take a break, and when we come back, we get right to the end of this and we outline some of the other things that they believe that they have taken into consideration in drawing this conclusion. Don't move. Come right back.
Life is always better with a little extra cash. At Solomon's, we know that every penny saved is a penny toward more happy times with those you love. With super savings in every aisle and budget-pleasing buys every time you shop, you can get closer to that family vacation you've been dreaming about. Go on, earn that new air fryer in produce. Snag that Exuma getaway with your cereal. Rawson Square Junkanoo tickets, aisle 7 just restocked. Bring it all together at Solomon's, where you can save more and live better.
Hubert Edwards Global, in collaboration with Dr. Dave Burrows and iRise, presents the 5th Annual Success Summit under the theme Success Keys to Transform Your World, December 3rd through 4th. 2 days of transformational experiences with dynamic presenters from the Bahamas, Nigeria, Canada, USA, and Jamaica. You can't afford to miss this mind shift moment. 5 scholarship grants, 2 leadership awards, 1 life-changing event. This is a virtual event, so visit www.nlsolutionsbahamas.com for more details. This is what you've been waiting for. Success Summit 2021.
for the best jerk in the Bahamas, you must have Balu's. Pork, fish, and chicken served with our delicious country-style sauce and authentic festivals. Balu's, Nassau East South. Call or WhatsApp 376-8951. Balu's, the jerk with the soul of reggae and the spirit of Junkanoo. Balu's jerk, traditional, slow-cooked to perfection. 376-8951. Get yours today.
This is Guardian Radio, 96.9 FM, Nassau, Bahamas.
And welcome back. We're taking a look at this downgrade of the debt, the Bahamas sovereign debt, and we have looked at the overview that was given by Standard & Poor's. We took a look at the general scenarios that they would have outlined that they would put in place, whether to upgrade or further downgrade if these things are in play. We looked at the rationale, the institutional profile, and we are now going to take a look at the flexibility and performance profile. And this talk about it zero in on the large deficit continue to drive up debt burden. And so basically they're saying here that the Bahamas is expected to post another significant budget deficit this year. What does that mean? In 2019, the deficit was 800 million, I think. Then it was 1.3 billion. And this year, it's expected to be 951. The good news is that based on the economic uplift, that deficit is expected to narrow. And they're proposing that the deficit will come in somewhere at about 7.8% of GDP. If we were GDP to be 9 billion or thereabouts, that's somewhere about 980 million. So we could see a reduction from the proposed deficit of 951 to 783. And that would be a good thing. I certainly want to see that fall way, way below that number. So they said they expect fiscal deficit this year, that's ending in 2022, to be at 8.7%. So the 8.7% at 9 billion would give you about 700 million. The national debt, it says here, is expected to terminate somewhere around 4.2% of GDP. Expected that the net growth in national debt, so the amount that may be added this year during 2021 to 2024, over the next 3 years, is expected to be around 400 million maybe per year. Certainly, if you run in a deficit of 700 million, then you must expect that the borrowing is going to be high on average. So somewhere within the ballpark of 400 to maybe 500, 600 million would be in striking distance. Here is what is true in terms of the argument they are proposing for the fiscal flexibility and performance profile. It's basically saying that the government has not announced any new revenue streams. We do not expect new taxes. They say that unequivocally. Government has not announced new revenue streams, and we do not expect new taxes. We expect any recommendations. I said we don't expect any recommendations and new policies arising from these committees will take several years. Oh, they expect that because the committee is going to be put together to look at these revenue policies. But it is their expectation that if these recommendations are made, then it will take several years before they have any meaningful impact on public finances. Maybe 1 year, 2 years, 3 years. But several years is the statement that they use here. The deficit will continue to spur government net debt burden higher to about 86.6% of GDP by the end of 2021. So we know that it was up in recent times. We expect that to come down. But it is deficit spending which is going to increase the revenue burden, and government interest payments of 21% is going to further reduce the flexibility to meet economic and social spending. So if there was another shock, the monies that was paid out to NIB, $200 million or so, the government is going to be in a weakened position of making those. That's pretty much what it is saying. It also talks about the effect of state-owned agencies and the fact that the reforms which have been identified as basically lagged, and also that the government expends about 15% of its expenditure as subvention to these state-owned agencies. So they are looking at the entire canvas. They're looking at the totality of what are some of the weak points in the whole fiscal and economic arrangement of the country. They made some mention about domestic banks and, you know, the fact that domestic banks were highly liquid and indebtedness was good, but, you know, there are some pressures and there is the possibility of a heightened increase in delinquency. And that is to be expected. But it also goes on to say that the Bahamas' limited monetary and exchange rate flexibility constrains the country's ability to respond to external shocks. Every single time you hear that, think about it in this way. And this is what they keep talking about, external shocks. If something was to happen, if there was to be a significant new wave of COVID, for example, and the tourists was to go away again, the Bahamas is going to be in a weaker position. That is what they're looking at. And I think they're looking at this, well, I'm significantly certain that they're looking at this through the lens of the borrower to say, if that happens, then the Bahamas is in a weakened position to repay. Not that it won't repay, but it is going to be in a weakened position to repay. Obviously, the government will, you know, pull up its bootstring and make changes and cuts in appropriate places, but it will be weakened. And so we have to bear that in mind, that these are the things that they're looking at. We expect the central bank will continue to rely primarily on a combination of interest rates, moral suasion, and macroprudential tools to influence domestic credit growth. There is a concern that domestic credit growth is mundane. It's stymied. The extent to which there is credit growth is indicative of the robustness of the economic machinery or machinations of the country. So it's likely that the central bank is in the background, tugging and pulling and saying to banks, you know, figure out a way of how you can lend some more, because this have implication for the economy. The velocity of money needs to turn over. And as a result of that turnover, it boosts economic activity. It increases the possibility of improved employment, so on and so forth. And that results in, ultimately, in economic growth. How did these persons come up with these things? They sat in a room someplace in the world and make these determinations. Absolutely not. They traveled to the country. or they call in, whether it's virtual, and they have conversation with various stakeholders. And I'm sure that one of those stakeholders that they must have had this conversation with is the central bank. And the question to the central bank is, we notice that there are high liquidity in the banking system. We appreciate that coming out of this with reduction in employment, there may be a pressure on loan quality. But we are also mindful that the banks need to lend in order to keep this buoyant. How exactly are you going to achieve that? And the central bank will say to them, well, we could look at interest rates or maybe lowering interest rates. We could look at moral suasion. And moral suasion is basically having a conversation to say, you know, think about it. Think about how you can make it easier. One of the things that the central bank could do, macroprudential, is, you know, debt to the debt service ratio is X percent. They may increase it to say, well, you don't need that much in order to borrow. It so makes it easier for an individual to go to the bank and obtain credit. Why is this important? Because credit drives the economy. The extent to which persons can borrow money to consume drives the economy. But, you know, there is a double-edged sword on that. Because sometimes if we have too much money, we are going to want to go to spend this at Walmart and Target and Sam's Club. And as a result of that, we are going to be pulling on the foreign exchange reserves. And that may be a little bit of a challenge for the country at this point in time. It did speak about the fact that the government had to borrow significantly for reserve. So it says, although external financing helps support the Bahamas foreign exchange reserve, it raised the country's external indebtedness. This is what you hear the current government is speaking to and questioning, why was there a need for so much borrowing in foreign currency? The truth be told, I think there is a argument to be made that that foreign currency was needed. Whether or not that much was needed, it's a different discussion. But some amount of foreign currency borrowing was definitely needed, because at one point in time, I don't think it was absolutely zero, but there was no tourists coming in. There was no foreign exchange flowing into the country. And because we have a peg, we maintain a one-to-one parity, we had to ensure, the government through the central bank had to ensure that it had sufficient foreign exchange reserve to defend that parity. And of course, there was still some element of purchasing taking place. And so the normal consumption had to be secured. Super Value was still buying goods. A lot of other business places were still buying goods, even though it was at a lower or slower level. But those would too require or demand conversion to foreign currency. So the extent, yes, may be an argument. But whether or not it was required, I think definitely so. Had to be. So here it is that we have it. We want to provide this dissecting and trust that it gives an understanding or a better understanding or at least a window to understanding exactly what is there and what we are faced with as a country. So I would encourage anyone out there who likes to do these things, who have an interest, or who discuss these. Sometimes we do this without having the requisite information. But if you do this, if you discuss these matters, then I would encourage you to grab a copy of this and read through it carefully. Because it's going to provide you with a significant amount of information and a deeper understanding of exactly where the Bahamas is today. Don't allow somebody to inform your views by giving you their opinion. Find the information and read it for yourself, and then seek to understand how you will move forward. I think we're going to end it there. But I want to encourage all persons out there, well, you know, this is not the end of the world. It's not doom and gloom. What we now know is we have an understanding of the areas of weaknesses. It's time to go to work. It's time to go to work to fix it. And as I've said on this program before, the country needs you. The country needs me. The country needs all of us. Every single person needs to play their part. If you sweep the street, sweep the street well. If you lift the bucket, lift the bucket well. If you're a construction worker, do it well. Whatsoever you are doing, this is the time where we must do it at our best because the country needs us. In tourism, in whatsoever era, we have to be at our best so that our earnings can be at their best. It's not simply just the bounce back. It's a question of, do the people want to come back? Do they want to come back in droves because of the type of service that we provide them with? And so I just want to say to you, do well. Life is funny. I had a conversation yesterday with a friend of mine, and we talked a little bit about, you know, how the last couple of months have been rough. And I said to her, you know, the one thing that this teaches me is it's not that easy to die. Even though things may be tough, you're not just going to keel over and die. So you just have to keep pushing forward. And then something happened today. Something happened today which kind of punched me deeply in the gut. And the only thing I could say to that, you know, very disappointing, but the only thing I could say about it is that life will throw you for a loop often. Significant loop. But the one thing you can do, maybe sometimes the only thing that you can respond with, is that you have to become comfortable with being uncomfortable. Become comfortable with being uncomfortable. And so we are going to leave it there. As we always say here on the show, never allow your greatness to be a victim of your unwillingness to change. You have been listening to The Essentials, The Reset. Good night.